I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic, your morning companions for talk, analysis, and key perspectives on Utah's biggest stories on KSL News Radio.
We've got a big lineup today. We're live in the Salt Palace here for Project Homeless Connect as they get ready for a big event here at the Salt Palace tomorrow to help people experiencing homelessness. Dave and I will dive into more of what is going on here. I think there's going to be a lot of interest regarding particularly the expungement of criminal records, because in our 10 o'clock hour, we're going to speak to an expert on that. I think a lot of people can learn how to expunge their own records just by listening today.
Yeah, and the reason this is important is because a lot of times these records that are totally available, you know, for expungement, those are preventing people from getting jobs,
right,
preventing them from getting into housing. So if you're eligible, you should absolutely know how to get rid of this.
This event starts actually tomorrow. It goes from 8 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The halls here at the Salt Palace will be lined with people who are experiencing homelessness, who need maybe a haircut, need to have those records expunged, but also with volunteers as well. We will take a full deep dive into all of the activities going on here in the next 24 hours during our show today, but also a big lineup in the way of what we're talking about. We're going to go live to Washington, D.C., where we're going to have a live conversation with Representative John Curtis in the 11 o'clock hour. House Speaker Brad Wilson calling the show in the 10 o'clock hour, where we will talk about tax cuts, water levels at the Great Salt Lake. So much on our agenda for House Speaker Brad Wilson in the 10 o'clock hour. And also tracking down more information on a story that really caught our attention this morning when we were listening to Utah's Morning News, that alleged camera disguised as a cell phone charger that was found in a unisex bathroom, according to police, at a gymnastics facility in Woods Cross.
This story has me seeing red, Debbie. It's so scary because cameras are so small, so easy to hide. Phones can be powered for days with small external batteries. And phone cases, right? The things that protect our very expensive phones, they are being used to conceal phones. They look like all sorts of stuff, so people just look past it.
Well, KSL.com, KSLNewsRadio.com reporting that 500 files with many child victims that were found on this particular device. So we will take a deep dive into that in the show today. For now, let's get to our other top local story.
Special coverage of the top local story.
Well, we are enduring the ninth interest rate hike in a row, with at least one more to come this year. The Fed hiking the interest rate again, 0.25%. But here's the headline I really want to drill down on, Dave. We can talk about so much stuff when it comes to interest rate hikes. Let's talk about credit card debt. Associated Press reporting that credit card debt at a record high as feds raise rates again. And the interest you pay on your credit card is going up again. And data is showing that more and more people are falling behind on those credit card payments.
How could you not with a 22% interest payment? If you're looking at a $5,000 balance, paying it off in 5 years, and this is not adding any more debt, this is just the $5,000 you have on your card, would cost me $3,300 in interest. And I'm paying that at $140 at a time every month.
Shane Stewart, certified financial planner, jumping in on the conversation bright and early this morning. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning.
I mean, you look at this, I sort of call this the wheel of financial death. You've got the feds who need to bring down inflation, which is costing Utah residents an extra $900 a month, which has us using our credit cards to fill up those budget gaps. And now our credit card interest rates are 22% is on the low end. I've seen some traditional credit cards as high as 28% when I went looking this morning. So how can we get past the wheel of financial death before we're all buried in this debt?
Yeah, it is a little surprising that we're getting buried in debt. Just a few years ago, with a few stimulus packages and everyone working back to work again, the economy seemed great, almost too great. That's why they're trying to slow it down. But we made some mistakes as a people in getting into debt. And now, as you say, it's almost not necessary. I never think a debt is necessary, but it's almost easy to see how someone could get into debt. I think there's three things that we all can do, whether we're behind in payments or not, that will help us. And they're to get control. You have to track what you've been spending, put a spending plan together, and then stick to that and give yourself a break when you don't, but at least have some sort of plan.
Help me understand the spending plan, especially if I have a couple of credit cards, you know, varying interest rates on each, different balances. What's the best way to attack that?
Yeah, and you notice I didn't start with attacking the debt, because usually if you're behind on payments or you've got some debt stacked up, it means you haven't been managing the here and now well enough to keep yourself out of debt. And you notice I didn't say budget either. It's a spending plan. Budgets are no fun. So we're just a little Jedi mind trick you play with yourself and say, it's a spending plan. And you really have to figure out how to get control. So that first step is find out what's really going on by tracking or looking back at your bank statements or your credit card statements. And then put a plan together that you'll stick to most of the time. You don't have to stick to it 100% of the time. But you're right, Dave. In order to get control of the debt, you've got to get control of the spending. But then you build into that spending plan a way to attack the debt and slow that down.
Is it better nowadays to pay off the credit card with the highest interest rate first as opposed to the credit card with the lowest balance on it, Shane?
Yeah, so the numbers will work out to tell you all that the highest interest rate paid first is usually the best, but that could take, if it's a high balance, it could take a long time. I'm actually a big fan of paying lowest balances, at least the first few lowest balances first, because you pay them off sooner, you get that endorphin rush, and it increases your chances that you're going to stick with it. So I recommend paying off those first few lower balances.
Shane Stewart, certified financial planner with DMBA, jumping into the conversation early this morning as we stare at outrageous levels of credit card debt now in America, putting more and more of the inflationary spending on our credit cards just to fill those budget gaps. So let's say we're in dire straits and haven't been able to make a payment. Do the credit card companies listen to us if we call them up and pray for mercy?
It doesn't hurt to ask. And you're talking about something that most people don't do when they get in this situation. It's easy to hide, or at least to avoid the situation. And what you're suggesting is right on. It's proactiveness. Find out what your options are. Go call around and see if you can get a little better interest rates. Not as likely right now, but it's still worth checking out and trying to do so.
Shane Stewart, certified financial planner with DMBA. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, really appreciate it, Shane. As I was looking over credit card rates today, Dave, my eyes, just about as you say, popped out of my head when I saw up to 28% for the more traditional bank Visas, and also even higher than that for store credit cards. So the trick is you get our arms wrapped around it. I think Shane gave us some great advice on how to start, but we do have to stick with that spending plan.
Spending plan, that is the key.
Right. Straight ahead, we're going to tackle our top national story. We're going to take you live to Washington, D.C., where the TikTok CEO is before Congress right now trying to prove that his social media app, which has 150 million users in America, is not a national security threat.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Dave and Dujanovic, special coverage of the top national story.
As we broadcast live all morning long from the Salt Palace for Project Homeless Connect, we've got our eye as well on Washington, D.C., high stakes hearing with the CEO of TikTok. For context, in the United States, TikTok enjoys 150 million users, and many of those are influencers, Dave, who are making their living creating these short videos that go viral almost on a regular basis. I saw one one TikTok user raking in, I looked at it was a Forbes report, $10 million or something like that a year.
Wow.
So there's a—
what are you and I doing? Holy cow.
So the CEO of TikTok went before Congress today. His whole goal is to prove to Congress that TikTok is not a national security threat. Let's listen
TikTok
to what he
said. TikTok itself is not available in mainland China. We're headquartered in Los Angeles and in Singapore, and we have 7,000 employees in the U.S. today. Still, we have heard important concerns about the potential for unwanted foreign access to U.S. data and potential manipulation of the TikTok U.S. ecosystem. Our approach has never been to dismiss or trivialize any of these concerns. We have addressed them with real action. Now, that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years, building what amounts to a firewall that seals off protected U.S. user data from unauthorized foreign access. The bottom line is this. American data stored on American soil by an American company overseen by American personnel.
I do chuckle a little bit about our obsession with TikTok. And now all of a sudden, we care about our data. We care about who knows what we're doing and what we care about and what comedians that I watch the most, right? We care about this when the internet has been tracking this pretty heavily for a while. Ann Flaherty joins us right now, senior national policy reporter for ABC News in Washington. Ann, thank you for joining us. Does the TikTok CEO have a chance of, I guess, calming fears?
Of that, I think, you know, of course, everyone tracks our data. You know, I agree with that. I think the concern here is that it goes straight to the Chinese government and a communist government at that. So what we heard today were lawmakers really drilling down into the algorithm. How does it work? Do Chinese employees have any influence into that algorithm? And, you know, when you look at the collection of IP addresses, that tells you where you're located. So we've already seen past reports of journalists being monitored, their whereabouts being monitored by the Chinese government. That's a big problem. If you're a journalist, if you're a military member, of course, we've banned it on government phones. But, you know, troops overseas, they have it on their private phones. They love TikTok. It's entertainment. It's like watching television. But that is also giving the Chinese government their precise locations at any moment and their preferences. So, you know, do we want a foreign government to have that kind of insight into our movements? They would know where you are at any time and by default who you're talking to. You know, as a journalist, we go to different locations. We talk to people privately. I would bring my phone. That's a concern when you have the Chinese government monitoring that. Now, of course, the TikTok CEO, Shou Chu, says, we're not going to give this to the Chinese government. We're going to spend billions of dollars on this firewall plan. But we heard from lawmakers today, they just were really skeptical of that.
Ann Flaherty is a senior national policy reporter, ABC News. She's live for us this morning in Washington as we keep an eye on the TikTok CEO testimony before Congress as he tries to prove to Congress that his company, is the app, this wildly popular app, is not a national security threat. I understand what's at the heart of lawmakers' concerns, but Anne, do you see that they have an appetite to actually ban it or give authority to the federal government to ban it?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, I don't think anyone knows exactly where this is going, because you have 150 million users in the United States, and people love it. It's wildly popular. I don't like it. I took it away from my kids because I thought it made them annoying. But it's, you know, they have this sort of cadence, and then all of a sudden my kids are asking me about things that in the news, like, oh, I heard, you know, is it true that did somebody really land on the moon? And I'm going, what? You know, get your news from real news. Don't, or to your teacher, don't get your news from TikTok. So, you know, and then they're always trying to make these recipes and all that. But I think, you know, what these lawmakers are up against is that this is actually contributing to the U.S. economy. You have small businesses that say their business relies on TikTok because that's how people find them. You have influencers who've carved out an income using TikTok. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of pushback on this. The question is, how could the government, the U.S. government, the Biden administration, or the Trump administration, which also supported this, how do you create it so that this is completely walled off from a government-controlled parent company? And the fact that they're willing to spend billions of dollars to keep that connection to that company, I think makes a lot of lawmakers really, really skeptical. So they're in a bind here. We really don't know how this is going to go.
Ann Flaherty, I'll be honest, if I saw a collaboration between you and Debbie Dujanovic doing a TikTok dance, I think it would go viral. I'll be honest. I think there's a market for it.
Ann, thank you so much for your coverage. We appreciate your insights. Ann Flaherty with ABC News, keeping an eye on that TikTok hearing. She's a senior national policy reporter for ABC in Washington. I also dove into this Washington Post article, Dave, because I saw this headline, and it's actually like an opinion piece from a columnist, but it says, is TikTok really giving your data to China?
Right.
Okay. And really at the end, it's like there's just no solid evidence that proves one way or the other. But what I thought was particularly interesting is this chart. And the reporter says, or the columnist says, Facebook still collects more data than TikTok, including gathering your precise location and everything else you put in your profile. But then they have this chart of what TikTok does collect about you. So you use the TikTok,
yep,
right? And your kids use TikTok. Your contacts, if you allow it.
Okay.
So TikTok can access all your contacts if you let that happen.
I say no every time, but go ahead.
According to the Washington Post, it also access, obviously, your camera and your microphone while you're making a video. It can pinpoint your approximate location. It gets your email address and your phone number. I think that's because you load that on the app as you're setting up your profile.
Yeah.
Your IP address, your keystroke patterns in the app, other mobile apps you use, your birthday, what you watch, accounts you follow, and your private messages.
I'm trying to think of if that is different from Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat.
Now, remember, I just said, according to the Washington Post, Facebook still collects more information than TikTok. And I want to add to that as well, TikTok also tracks, according to this article, accounts you follow.
Yeah, I think there's, of course they do. Of course they track that. Like, that's how they give me all the interesting videos that I'm interested in.
Are you okay with an app tracking that, but also okay with the Communist Party potentially gathering that information in China?
Yeah.
Having access to it.
I guess I'm going to have to see some real world application, you know, where
evidence.
This is where. Yeah. It feels like this is like guilty before being proven of even committing a crime. Right. There is a possibility. There's a possibility with 1,000 different companies. It's scary because we say China. As soon as we tie it to China, everyone panics. It does feel like selective outrage and panic.
We have a huge lineup this morning. I'm so excited about the next several hours of the show. We are going to be speaking in the 10 o'clock hour to an expert, a legal expert, in how to expunge criminal records and which ones you are allowed to expunge, which ones you're not, what the waiting period is, what the cost is, as we broadcast live from the Saul Palace. So they get ready for a huge event tomorrow from 8 to 3. It's called Project Homeless Connect. Tons of people will be in here tomorrow, lining the hallways, getting all kinds of free services. So that is on tap, as well as Representative John Curtis calling the show in the 11 o'clock hour, as well as how Speaker of the Utah House Brad Wilson calling the show in the 10 o'clock hour. And straight ahead, we're going to have a live conversation with our legal expert, Greg Skordas, about the recording device that was, police say, was found in a bathroom of a gymnastics facility up in Woods Cross. Do parents have any recourse right now if their child was caught on this hidden camera? Next.
Dave and Dejanovic.
This story that we're discussing right now is ripped right from the headlines at KSLNewsRadio.com, Dave. Police in Woods Cross arresting the owner of USA Gymnastics World in Woods Cross after they say a hidden recording device was found in a bathroom at the facility.
This makes me see red. Just infuriating. Again, not only is it an incredible invasion of privacy, and there are victims. How many victims?
70, according to this article.
500 files, mm-hmm. 70 victims.
Yeah.
I mean, what can be done? Because I'm really worried about this big picture as well, because we have phones everywhere. We have video, pictures, even hidden cameras.
Well, and to your point, according to this article, it was disguised as a cell phone charger. So maybe somebody thought they were charging their cell phone, or like, oh, gee, that's so sweet. Somebody left a cell phone charger in the bathroom. It turned out to be a recording device, according to police. As you said, 500 files, many child victims secretly recorded while they were using the restroom.
Yeah, it just sick on so many levels. Greg Skordas, KSL legal analyst, joins us right now. I mean, Greg, obviously, that not a big surprise. This is incredibly illegal. How harsh is this punishment, or how bad of a crime is this?
Well, in this case, Dave, if an individual is taking pictures of minors, this could be what we call production of child pornography, which is an incredibly serious crime if it was committed. If these kids are under age 14, and if it shows any sort of private part of their body, this could be, in the federal court system, these crimes carry a 15-year minimum mandatory sentence sometimes. And if there are, like you say, 70 images or 70 kids or 500 files, it could be very significant if he's convicted of this.
Well, it's according to this article I'm reading from Greg, the footage showed individual setting up a camera in a boy's locker room in a bedroom of his home as well. So this could extend beyond the allegations that are coming out of USA Gymnastics World in Woods Cross. Beyond that, I guess we'll have to wait to see. I'm wondering, what should parents do? I mean, if it were my child, I found out used that bathroom or was in the boy's locker room or whatever, I wouldn't even know where to begin to turn. What are your thoughts on that,
Debbie? And I think that we would hope that parents would trust the quality of work that they do at the Woods Cross Police Department. And I'm sure everyone is concerned right now. I think the greatest concern a parent would have is whether or not these images were ever shared, whether they're out there in the internet right now. Because if that's the case, as you know, the genie's out of the bottle. They're contained, if they're still on his devices, if the police have seized all those, I think parents can have some assurance that at least the children's images are not going to be shared, for years to come.
Greg, thank you for joining us, KSL legal analyst Greg Skordas. And Debbie, one of my concerns, especially when you talk about not just a camera, but using a cell phone, oftentimes these things can be uploaded to the cloud automatically, so they're immediately on the internet. Now, that being said, I do know that Google Photos and Apple iCloud, they monitor and they have algorithms that look for this kind of pornography. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but they have said in the past that there are filters to help prevent these from just automatically being uploaded.
We should definitely track down a tech expert and ask them some of those specific questions. Great information, Greg Skordis, as always. We are going to continue to track this story throughout the show, and I'm sure this will be one of the top stories as Maria Chaleos and Jeff Kaplan take over the afternoon duties for all news. Want to flip the phone lines over to bring Mike Akerlo into the conversation. He is in charge of Project Homeless Connect. We're over here at the Salt Palace watching crews get set up. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. We're glad you're there.
This is a big event. Starts at 8 o'clock tomorrow to 3 tomorrow afternoon. Tell us what's going to go on here.
Oh, yes. We have a big day planned. So at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, we have breakfast for those who are experiencing homelessness. At 9 o'clock, we open our doors into Hall 5 at the Salt Palace, and we'll have about 80 service providers there ready to provide services throughout the day. And then we have about 900 volunteers showing up to help us put this all together.
When you talk about services, what specifically will be offered?
Oh, we've got a huge range. We've got everything from housing help and employment, people getting registered for Medicaid. We have legal services, haircuts, pet care. We have a whole veterans section. We have dentists coming in to do extractions and cleanings. Moran Eye Center is coming in to do eye screenings and can provide glasses right on site. We have a lot of services that will make a big difference in people's lives.
Mike, for our listeners who may want to get involved, what are the options at this point?
Our online registration closed last night. However, you can still come to the Salt Palace tomorrow and come to our volunteer check-in. There are signs all over that will lead you there. You can come in the morning and or whenever it works for you during the day and sign up. We can register you there on site. Our doors do close at 3 o'clock. So if you're thinking afternoon, later afternoon, we probably won't have anything available for you that time, but we'd love to see you tomorrow morning. We are a little nervous with the snow and the weather. What it might do. So we would love to see as many people come out as we can tomorrow to help us.
Mike Akerlo, thank you for joining the current director of Project Homeless Connect.
Look forward to this big event tomorrow, Mike, and I'm very much looking forward to our next conversation. This is an individual, Dave, who has lived and experienced homelessness, survived addiction, a true success story. I'm excited to hear more next.
Dave and Dujanovic. Dave and Dujanovic.
Broadcasting live all morning long from the Salt Palace as they gear up here for tomorrow's major event to help people experiencing homelessness called Project Homeless Connect. I'm very much looking forward to learning from our next guest, Dave, Rachel Santizo. She's lived through homelessness and also through addiction. She is a true success story.
We've been able to be a part of Project Homeless Connect over the years. COVID, I think, really hurt some of the momentum, right? Because it was just absolutely an incredible success, and then everything shut down. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the casualties, I think, that sometimes we didn't realize is how much it affected those of our homeless friends.
Rachel Santizo, good morning. So much for being here with us. And we just pull you out of the setup there. I know you're such a help here and such an inspiration.
Thank you.
Talk about your journey. I read a Salt Lake Tribune article that said you started to really turn things around about 2000. It sounds like 2012.
Yes.
What was that light bulb moment, and where were you at in that moment?
Oh man, where I was at, I used to live underneath cars off North Temple. And the reason I lived underneath cars is because I remember running for my life. I was in a domestic violence relationship, and I was trying to find somewhere to hide. And so I slid under a car, and nobody could see me, but I could see everyone. So my homelessness was living underneath cars. And I was never afraid for them to start, because at times I wish they would, because I didn't want to live anymore, but I didn't have the courage to take my own life.
And we're grateful for that.
Yeah.
What pulled you through and pulled you out of that?
I got exhausted. I was just tired of being tired. And so I started looking up resources and I found the Volunteers of America, which will also be here.
So
at this event,
what does that recovery look like? Because I think sometimes people envision, you know, a magic wand being waved and, oh, you're fixed, or we gave you some resources. But it's much more in depth than that. It is a long process, and at times it can be multi-year or even multi-decade process.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Actually, I just celebrated 11 years sobriety on Tuesday, and sometimes I feel like I work on it more now than I did when I was 30 days. Because what happens is you remove the drugs and the alcohol. I went through treatment, and then your life begins. Right. And you're trying to get your life back. And there's a lot of barriers against you, which this Project Homeless Connect, that's what we do, is we're trying to break down those barriers for individuals. But you have all these barriers and then life gets lifey. That's what I like to say, because it's situational.
That.
There's things that happen. And so how do you deal with that when you don't have the coping mechanisms of the drugs or the alcohol? And so life is always getting lifey.
How did you become addicted? You talked about being in a domestic violence relationship, which sent you running and sleeping under cars. Where did the addiction component come in, Rachel?
Thank you for asking that. It started when I was 24. I had a hysterectomy, and they prescribed me pain pills. And that's where it began for me. And I never imagined that at 12 years old that I was going to grow up being addicted to the needle and heroin at that point. But yeah, mine started with pain pills.
How does that progress? Because I think we talk about that often. You're like, oh, the prescription drugs, be careful. How does it progress from the prescription drugs to the heroin?
Oh, thank you for asking that one as well. So what happens is you start getting physically addicted at the pills. And so I went to my doctor and I was saying I had these symptoms, and they thought I was having panic attacks when really I was having withdrawals. And so in order for me, I was a single mom with two kids. So the number one thing that I wanted is I didn't want to be sick. So I started like being introduced. There was a girl at my work that would get morphine pills. So I started buying the pills. So you start buying them for your habit, and then it even spirals more out of control. Then the next thing you know, you're introduced to other people, behaviors, drugs. And then I was introduced to heroin.
And it's cheaper, isn't it, than
buying
prescription drugs illegally?
And it lasts longer. Absolutely. So that's the solution right there. When I'm sick and I don't want to be sick, okay. And the first time I did heroin, I actually injected. Because I love my kids. I loved them so much at a point that I gave away custody of them. I do have them back in my life today. But I never thought, like, I decided to inject because I didn't want to smoke and have it in the air or around my kids. So my first time, I was like, I'm going to use heroin for 2 weeks so I can get off pills, because that's what I'm addicted to. And then it's not going to affect my kids, and then I'm going to be good.
But heroin just absolutely strangles its users, right?
Oh, yeah. It's powerful. This entire thing is powerful. All addictions are extremely powerful. And once it gets a hold of you, there's no going back.
So many folks, I think, that are experiencing homelessness struggle with this very thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's mental illness, drugs, alcohol, using these as coping mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
What does a day, you know, like tomorrow, Project Homeless Connect, come here, resources, how does that, I guess, empower individuals that are in incredible struggles? How does that help?
Oh, it helps because when you get to come in, when you come to this event, you don't have to have an ID. You don't have to have insurance. You don't have to have anything at all, just you. And you get to come as you are. And we're offering all resources to break down those barriers, to empower someone, or to just give them a little bit of hope. I think the best part about tomorrow is letting people know that they matter. Because when you are living homelessness, everything that you're very judged and you're very invisible, right? But everything on the outside reflects everything I'm feeling on the inside. So there's nothing that you can say or do that takes that, you know, from me. So actually just looking at someone and letting them know they matter, that might be the only time that they feel that or that they will ever feel it. But we have over 900 volunteers to let people know in Salt Lake that they matter. That's the magic of tomorrow.
Rachel Santizo is working with Project Homeless Connect. Mm-hmm. She's here with us live at the Salt Palace. This event she's talking about starts tomorrow at 8. It mm-hmm. goes until 3. Lots of services, totally free. Yeah. For people experiencing homelessness. Mm-hmm. Rachel herself was homeless. Also, you just walked us through your addiction and that moment that you had that you just said you got tired of being tired. Mm-hmm. I want to paint some perspective. I know you have turned your life around and you've been living this life now for a while, right?
Right.
But what? How invisible is the issue on our streets and along like the Jordan River Trail that we don't even know how big of an issue homelessness is?
Well, I think the issue is that it's misunderstood and it's feared, and that doesn't need to be. We have so many resources and things out there that the more that we educate ourselves and the more that we hear the voices and the stories of those experiencing homelessness or who have, the more change we can create. There really is no reason to be scared or to not understand. It's very easy to put yourself in someone else's shoes and take away that stigma or that judgment. And so it is a lot larger than we think. We have a lot of trafficking. We have a lot of prostitution. We have a lot of stuff on our streets. But there's also a lot of solutions and hope. So the more that we talk about it, the more we can do something about it because it's real and it's happening.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your experience. A powerful one. And congratulations, 11 years sober.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
How does that feel?
Oh, it feels really good. Sometimes, to be honest, sometimes it's harder to succeed than it is to fail. So I actually sometimes get more uncomfortable when I'm doing really well in life than I ever did, because that's comfortable to me, is feeling that I'm unworthy or undeserving. So
we love some self-sabotage, don't we?
Yes.
We absolutely love that.
<It's fine>.
We got to fight it, though. Thank you so much for joining us.
Rachel, thank you for sharing your story and being vulnerable and open for our listeners to hear this. Yes, I think that there's a lot of families that just need to know that they're not going through this alone.
Yeah.
And that addiction is real, and also the progression of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, like I said, that light bulb moment you had when you got tired of being tired. So
yeah.
Thank you so much. Congrats on your success. High five.
Thank you.
All right. Stick around because I want a photo with you. I want to post it on Facebook
okay, thank you.
A moment. We have got so much more in the 11 or the 10 o'clock hour. House Speaker Brad Wilson joining us at 10:05. Dave, what's your top question for the Speaker of the House?
Oh, my goodness. There's so much. Regarding homelessness?
Taxes. Let's talk taxes.
Yeah, there's so many things.
Tax cuts. How's that? We'll start with that. He's calling in 5 minutes.
KSL FM Midvale. KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio. Utah's all-day companion for news.
I promised a big lineup today, and we are delivering. We are still live, of course, at the Salt Palace. They're gearing up for Project Homeless Connect, which launches tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. Hundreds of people experiencing homelessness will have lots of free services all day long here at the Salt Palace. Right now, we're going to turn the conversation over to House Speaker Brad Wilson. Lots to talk about with him, including funding for people who are experiencing homelessness and services, and also something that is getting some mixed reviews, the $400 million tax cut the legislature delivered to Utah taxpayers.
It's astounding how much money, number one, our state has to spend. I guess that's a celebration, right? We're not deficit spending like the federal government. We spend what we have, but we have a lot. And the state budget was, I think, nearly $29 billion that they had to allocate. So, yeah, you talk about $400 million there and $400 million there. It goes to a lot of different places. Speaker Wilson, thanks for joining us.
It is great to be with both of you, as always. And thank you for your work on this homelessness project.
Walk us through. I mean, we've seen several initiatives over the year, Project Rio Grande, with trying to deal with homelessness. What is the state's goal right now? What's the best way to approach it? Because it can feel daunting and overwhelming, and it feels like there are 1,000 different people trying to do 1,000 different things at times.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, from my perspective, what we did in the House up on the Capitol, on Capitol Hill this year, was had a big priority around affordability and housing in general. So different avenues related to housing. It's not just the homelessness issue that we're challenged with right now, but everyday Utahns are having a hard time finding attainable housing because of how expensive housing has become. And so we went into the session with a lot of intention around what can we do to help solve all of these problems. We passed a number of bills to help cut red tape so that housing can be approved more quickly. We also put a tremendous amount of funding into everything from making sure we had more supply of first-time homes for young families, but also resources and funding into supporting Utahns that are experiencing homelessness. And in that particular space, you know, well over $100 million of one-time and ongoing money to create deeply affordable housing, to have services for those that are experiencing homelessness, and to make sure that we keep really affordable kind of lower rent housing available so that it doesn't all get converted to more expensive housing. And then a lot of resources too going to cities that have homeless resource centers in them so that they have some funds to help mitigate the costs that they experience having those homeless centers in their communities.
Utah Speaker of the House Brad Wilson live on the line with us right now as we dive into a wrap of the general the legislative session, the general session, which wrapped up not too long ago, but still some lingering questions. Thanks so much for addressing the homelessness funding with us, House Speaker Wilson. I want to dive into what some people, you're getting mixed reviews on this $400 million tax cut. I'm just looking at an article I pulled off of KSL.com. It says an average family making $80,000 a year, family of four, would realize about $208 a year in savings. Doesn't sound like a lot. But what's your response to that?
Well, two things. First of all, I think maybe people should talk to those families that are trying to raise three or four kids that are experiencing grocery bills, gas bills, utility bills that are all going up, and even having a couple hundred extra dollars a year in their pocket can make a meaningful difference. But the other interesting thing is that's just a part of the tax cuts we did. In total, they were close to $850 million. And over the last 4 years, we've cut taxes $1.2 billion. So this year, in addition to the income taxes, which is what you just talked about, Deb,
right,
we cut the gas tax, we cut property tax, we cut taxes for seniors on Social Security. We gave families with children under age three some additional tax credits. When you add all of those things up, it's much more impactful than what that article described. And every Utah that's paid taxes in the state of Utah in one way or another will benefit from this. And if the voters pass the sales tax off food in the fall of next year, that's some additional money. I think the average family in that scenario will save another $100 to $200 in sales tax that way. So we have been so prosperous as a state because people have worked so hard here. Fastest growing state in the country, best economy in the country. And we could keep all that money that has come to the state in government coffers, but I think a much better use of it is to put it back in the pockets of citizens so they can spend it on things that help them as they battle inflation.
Joining us now, Utah Speaker of the House, Brad Wilson. I saw an interesting breakdown when it came to budgets and looking across states and comparatively speaking. It was interesting because they broke it down state budget per capita. So, you know, we got, what, 3.2, 3.4 million people in Utah a $28, $29 billion budget, and how much we are spending was basically the same amount that New York is spending, who we view as freewheeling and free spenders. California comes under us. Are you at all concerned with the size of the budget and how much it has grown in just the last 10 or 20 years? I looked at the state budget 20 years ago. It was like $8 billion, and now we're at 29.
Yeah, so I haven't seen that article. Maybe you could shoot it over to me. But, you know, what's interesting is the state budget has grown a lot. I've been up at the legislature a little over a decade, and the budget's grown a lot. But what's interesting is we actually collect less tax per capita today than we did a decade ago when, you know, I rolled into the legislature, for example, and a lot of my colleagues did. The reason our budget has grown so much is not because we're taxing people or spending more. We're taxing people and spending less on things we have tax dollars going into in the state. It's grown because our per capita income in the state of Utah has grown faster than almost anywhere in the country because we're so much more productive here than other places. That's why we keep cutting taxes, is because we think that should be rewarded with people being able to keep more of their own money.
House Speaker Brad Wilson, before we let you go, I was just thinking as I was listening to Dave and you in that exchange, do you see a day in Utah's future where we don't collect state income tax?
So you're seeing a movement across the country to reduce income taxes like we have been. You do have to pay for roads and
right. The
criminal justice system and pay for, you know, some of the things we state parks, things like that somehow. But there's other ways to do it, sales tax, property tax, things like that. I think it'll be interesting to see how that evolves over the course of the next decade or two across the country and in Utah. The one thing I'm confident of is you're going to continue to see lawmakers try to find ways to reduce taxes because it is it's a challenge in terms of productivity. Businesses thrive more when taxes are lower, and we just know that it's a better framework in general. We actually have a process now. We started a couple years ago where before we even start the budgeting process, there's a review on how can the legislature and the state look at maybe where some taxes we could thin out a little bit. And we do that before the budgeting process starts.
House Speaker.
Great information.
Brad Wilson, thank you.
Thank you.
For taking the time and joining us.
Anytime.
Thanks, House Speaker Wilson. We look forward to continued conversations with you on a regular basis. I appreciate your time today, kind of fleshing through some of those important issues that particularly affect Utah's pocketbooks. Straight ahead, we still a big lineup ahead. We know we're waiting for the 11 o'clock hour. Excited to hear from Representative John Curtis. He was recently named in a survey or study as one of the most effective members of Congress. You really latched onto that yesterday, so we dialed up Representative Curtis's office, and he made time for us today at 11:35.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I've said this before, but I think Utah really punches above its weight. You know, we're a small state in the middle of nowhere. And we do a great job with influence, and the policies that push, I think, is really unique to our state.
Straight ahead, we're going to have a conversation with Project Homeless Connect's director. She's live at the Salt Palace with us. She's going to stop by our radio booth here. One question, Dave, that we got from one of our listeners as we were live here, and we're going to see if we can get an answer from her, is where do you park if you're volunteering tomorrow? This is going to be a massive event, lots of volunteers participating. So we'll ask her that question and many more straight ahead.
Dave and Dejanovic.
We're continuing our live coverage this morning from the Salt Palace as volunteers get prepped, ready for Project Homeless Connect, where 2019, which was the last time they held this event because COVID locked things down, of course, 1,100 people who are experiencing homelessness, Dave, participated in that event where they could come here, get free haircuts, get free legal services, get a free breakfast in the morning, get free dental care. The list goes on and on, and hopefully more people will show up tomorrow than even in 2019.
Well, I think that was one of the really unfortunate parts of the COVID shutdown is programs that had a lot of momentum that had built up for years, or you know, a lot of movement. COVID shut everything down, and we were just incapable of doing a lot of this, this kind of stuff. And I remember this back in 2019 and what an incredible success it was. What's next?
Katie Zimmerman, you are next year's Project Homeless Connect director. But for right now, you are here at the Salt Palace getting ready for tomorrow's big event. We've got some questions from volunteers who are going to be coming down here tomorrow. We'll get to those in just a minute. What do you anticipate for tomorrow in terms of turnout?
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with you all and to have you on site as well.
It's been fun.
It's been so fun. So this is really my learning year. Mike Akerlo is the person that really started this, and you spoke with him earlier today. He did 2016, 17, 18, and 19. And now this year, I really get to learn from him a lot and carry it forward next year as well. So tomorrow, like you said, in 2019, we had 1,100 guests. We're hoping for as many people as we can possibly get tomorrow as well. We've set up a transportation system for folks to get here from the homeless resource centers, as well as the winter overflow sites that are now open in Mill Creek and other locations as well. We really want to get as many people access to services as we can. And also looking at the weather report, it sounds like even just having folks inside and be able to be warm for the day is going to be a great addition as well. So we're just excited to have everyone down here.
Who should come? Who qualifies?
Anyone who's currently experiencing homelessness, who's housing insecure, anyone that needs help is really welcome to be here. We want to help out as many folks as we possibly can. Our focus is on people experiencing homelessness, but if there's someone who's right on the edge, or if they could get a warrant cleared or something that could keep them in housing, we want them to come as well so that we can help keep people housed.
We're going to talk more about those legal services that will be available here tomorrow and how to expunge a criminal record in about 30 minutes from now with the legal expert. People do not need ID to show up here. Am I correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Anyone's welcome to walk in the door. They don't need ID. They don't even have to tell us their name if they don't want to. If they want to come get a meal, if they need a haircut, anything. They're welcome to walk
it's
through the door.
It's all free.
It's all free. Yeah.
One of the volunteers texted the station and said, I just don't know where to park. Can you give us some hints on where the best place for volunteers to park is, Katie?
Absolutely. So we, the Gateway has actually given us some parking validations for our volunteers. So folks are welcome to park at the Gateway. We'll provide a validation for them at our info booth for that. And then we would also really just encourage folks to use tracks. I mean, we're downtown, street parking's available.
Right across from Vivint.
Right across from Vivint, yeah. We've got the stop right exactly there.
It's less than half a block from the arena.
Yeah, it really is.
It's right there.
You're across the street, yeah. And you're there already. So, yeah, there's street parking, City Creek, any of the downtown parking is available. We only have validations for the Gateway, though, and then would just encourage folks to use the free fare zone and transit to get in.
You have a lot of volunteers that have stepped up and want to be participants. Do you take walk-in volunteers tomorrow, or has that opportunity passed?
That's a really great question. We've actually closed volunteer opportunities for this event as of yesterday, and that's really because we want our volunteers to be trained. This is a population that can sometimes be sensitive. We want folks to be aware of this event and what's it like to volunteer as well, because it's a huge convention hall. We really need people that know what they're doing so that we can kind of present that confidence to folks that are coming through the door as well. So for this year, volunteer opportunities have closed, but we would encourage folks to follow us on Instagram for opportunities for next year. It's PHCSLC is our handle. And then as well, if you're out and about tomorrow, if you see somebody that's experiencing homelessness, encourage them to come down. That's a great way to volunteer, kind of volunteer outreach without being an official volunteer. If you see someone around, encourage them to come on down. The entrance is on 3rd West, and we'd love to have them.
Katie Zimmerman is with Salt Lake County. She's also next year's director for Project Homeless Connect. We are live broadcasting here all morning long in foreshadowing tomorrow's big event where more than probably 1,100 people, we're hoping,
yes.
Anybody who's experiencing homelessness or is at risk can show up here and get a ton of free services. If you had to pick one free service that you felt was the most helpful to somebody experiencing homelessness that's offered here tomorrow, is there one that you could zero in on? Is it the haircuts? Is it the free legal services? Is it the free meal?
Wow. Okay, that's a really big question.
Tooth extraction or glasses?
Tooth extraction.
Well, goodness.
Imagine. I mean, I have a horrible eyesight, and it's obviously I've corrected, right? And I'm very fortunate. I have an insurance plan. It covers it all. I just can't imagine going through life not being able to see correctly, or going through life with a constant toothache. You know. So but I guess it just depends on. On what that person is experiencing and what the thing they need the most, but it's all right here.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think homelessness is such an interesting issue because there is no one size fits all solution. Yeah. Every person experiencing homelessness has their own experience and their own thing that's going to help bring them out of that. I think the biggest thing that folks are going to walk away from tomorrow is that human connection, being able to talk to volunteers, being able to be appreciated for a day, making eye contact with people, having that conversation. That human connection is, to me, the magic of what PHC is. All those services are helpful and they add to that person's experience and helps them a little bit as well, can elevate their experience. But really having the human connection is what matters the most here, I think.
Katie, thanks for joining us. Katie Zimmerman, Salt Lake Valley Coalition to End Homelessness, and next year's director for Project Homeless Connect. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to next conversation. We'll speak to a stylist who does the free haircuts. For tomorrow, and at 10:50, we'll have the legal expert joining us as well to talk about expunging criminal records, what can get expunged, what doesn't get expunged, what the waiting period is, all those other things that a lot of people want to know about. Katie, thank you so much. Also on the 11 o'clock hour, Representative John Curtis calling the show. He's rated as one of the most effective members of Congress. We're going to ask him what his secret is. So plenty more straight ahead live from the Salt Palace.
Dave and Degenovic.
Part of the events here tomorrow at the Salt Palace for Project Homeless Connect, haircuts. Hundreds and hundreds of haircuts will be had here tomorrow, Dave. And you have a couple of stylists in your own family. Usually it could take
half the family
an hour or so for a haircut, hour and a half. Some of these haircuts will be done in as quick as maybe 5 or 10 minutes here tomorrow, but it is so meaningful. That's an important 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, I got four sisters-in-law. Three of them are stylists, so I know it very well. And it is, it's so important, I think, on so many levels, because fundamentally, let's be honest, they can be expensive, they can be inconvenient, they can be, it's sometimes hard to find the right person. But if you're experiencing homelessness, I also think, and we've discussed this before, that maybe there's a self-consciousness that that plays into it. Princess Kennedy joins us right now. You run a barbershop, or is it you're a stylist and a barber? Do you do it all?
A hair emporium.
Okay, hair emporium. I love it.
I own a salon at Library Square, which is in the downtown public library.
And you're here tomorrow. Well, you're
I'm here today getting set up.
So you said that last time you cut hundreds of people's hair.
We have a little bit. It's been so chaotic in the years past. I have a little bit more of a game plan for our check-in, because at the end of the day, people come and check in and they don't come back, and then there's some people that slip in without being noticed, and so we don't have a number that is specific, but it's somewhere between 300 and 700.
Wow. And you have help.
I do have help. This is what is so amazing about this part of doing it, is that the barber stylist community of Salt Lake City is so willing to jump on the train and come and help. And I've got I'm planning on having about 75 stylists that have volunteered tomorrow to come and hang out all day long. It makes me a little bit emotional and do, And if we get that many, we do 10 haircuts each, and we've helped so many people.
Right.
Do you want to know what the best part about that is, though?
I would love to.
Is that these kids and people that come to do these haircuts. I had people from St. George. I had people from Ogden, Provo, that come up here to do this. And these people take this story of coming and humanizing these people and hearing their stories, because there's a lot of stereotypes that comes in with this, unfortunately, right? And they take this humanizing experience back to their clients and back to their community. And in turn, they get inspired to help out in any way they can. And therefore, I have changed hundreds of lives. No, I mean, it's just, you know, people don't realize that the experience goes way beyond what they're doing in the moment.
You chuckle through it, but it's probably underestimating. It's probably been thousands of people that this kind of service has reached out and changed. Why are haircuts important? Why is that a priority in here?
Many, many different reasons. One is they just get the simple communication with people that they might not normally get. You know, our unhoused community can be invisible.
When you sit in a stylist chair, you have a conversation.
Right, usually. And you're actually having a conversation with somebody who is equipped to talk to you about personal issues. I'm not saying that we're licensed therapists, but I'm sure saying we've got a lot of practice.
Trust me. If anybody wants personal information about me, they go right to my stylist, for sure. I think that's very true. There is that intimate connection.
And with long, that intimate connection is pure touch.
Yeah.
Just being touched and cared about and
pampered.
Listened to.
Pampered.
And, yeah. And then, like, the changes. You know, at the end of the day, we do a lot of buzzing hair and beards, you know, we do a ton. It is a ton of buzzing hair to beard. They don't know when the next time is that they can come by. You know, I have myself, I offer free haircuts at the salon at the library. One of our people is going to be Joshua Lucero. They offer free haircuts, but
you don't know if they're going to get there again.
We don't know when they're going to get there again. Yeah, exactly. And they don't know if they're going to be able to get there again. And so this is just a chance to really make a difference and let people feel like they're cared about.
Is there anyone that stands out to you that you had a special connection with?
I do. In fact, I'm hoping to get her to come with me tomorrow, a woman named Kaya, who the first one I did came and, quite frankly, we couldn't really help her with her specific hair needs there. And I do that. You know, if there's people at the event that, you know, their specifics, they need a little bit more personal treatment, I just have them come in. And Kaya and I bonded with a friendship. And Kaya went into treatment and kind of got her act together. And then we sort of lost each other during the pandemic. And I saw her working at a convenience store.
Oh, nice.
After that. That's and wonderful. Just recently she's come in to invite me over to her new apartment that she has by herself for Taco Tuesday. You know, and it's just stuff like that that happens. And, you know, and I've had many clients that have come in and they started with me as somebody here or a homeless person that came in for treatment at the salon. And then they eventually came to pay me for their haircuts because they've gotten
That's
a job
amazing.
And they've come on. So, you know, it's a marketing tool for myself, I guess, as well.
We know better.
You've got a great spirit. I'm so happy you're going to be here tomorrow.
Thank you. Me too. And we're going to have a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. And you're going to send a lot of people away with brand new haircuts.
A lot of smiles.
Awesome. Princess Kennedy. You also have a salon at Library
Square.
Salon
at Library Square.
And you do free haircuts there too.
I do free haircuts for people experiencing, you know, that are monetized in different ways. You know what I mean? SalonSLC.com. Look it up.
All
Come
right.
and see me.
Awesome. Princess Kennedy, have fun tomorrow.
All right. Thank
and
you.
How
I will.
How many stylists joining you?
75-ish.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
From all over Utah.
You guys have a great day.
All right. We're continuing broadcasting live from the Salt Palace where Project Homeless Connect kicks off tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. A lot of people asking about volunteering. Volunteer opportunities closed yesterday, but our very own Peter Johnston, one of our producers at Broadcast House, also a reporter. Good morning.
It's so boring without you here, Deb.
We are across the street at the Salt Palace, Peter, where you will be volunteering tomorrow. Did you have to go through training?
Yeah. Just a couple days ago, I went there, and I was surprised at the number of people that were there. There were like 150, and there's a training before that I'm sure had hundreds more.
So what did they train you in?
So they were telling us from the top, like, what to expect. So my role is going to be as a guest guide. And so what that means is that people are going to show up and maybe they'll have pets, maybe they'll have other items with them that they need to get checked in. After that, I'll be assigned to them and I'll be the one kind of guiding them through the services that they identify that they need. So we'll start off a lot of the time apparently with like dentists, optometrist stuff, just because that's the most time intensive stuff. And then after that, we'll just guide them to haircuts and other things that they might need.
Well, Peter, I think it's amazing that you're giving back of your time to our community. Is that what prompted you to sign up?
Yeah, it's funny how it happened. I missed this thing called the point in time survey, which is basically like once a year, people go out and see like how many people are experiencing homelessness on the streets.
Right. We measure homelessness on that one day.
Yeah. 100%. Mm-hmm. Happens
and
everywhere.
You missed that.
I missed that. And a friend sent me a link saying, hey, even though you missed this, what about this one? So I signed up. I didn't really know what I was getting into. And I'm really excited about this because, you know, it's this opportunity to like give visibility to these people that apparently, according to Rachel Santizo, one of those people that she was helping, no one had looked them in the eye for 3 days and they literally thought they were invisible. And so that just kind of leaves a big mark on you, you know, and you're like, wow, right. You know, if things had gone a little differently, I could see myself in their situation very easily. And so, yeah.
Peter Johnston, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, Peter, thank you. And thank you for giving back to our community tomorrow as you help the guests who show up here, or at least one of them, walk through the process. There will be hundreds and hundreds of people, thankfully lots and lots of volunteers to help them. And that's such a critical role here. Looking forward to it. He mentioned Rachel Santizo. By the way, we spoke to Rachel earlier in the show, in our 9 o'clock hour. She is a success story. She said, I got tired of being tired. She was living under cars as she was living through homelessness, and she decided one day to turn her life around. It is an incredible story of kicking addiction and, you know, picking herself up every day to continue living the life that she's found now. I would suggest podcasting her on your favorite podcast platform where we podcast the show every single day.
It was an incredible story. And listen, this is a day that we're able to get together and help out and serve, but it's a day, right? This doesn't fix everything. This is not a one day kind of fix. This is a good way to get started, because sometimes pulling yourself out or getting the help that you need is not just a day. It's days, weeks, years, decades.
Straight ahead, a conversation. Even if you are not experiencing homelessness, you may have a criminal record that has haunted you for many, many years in terms of being able to find employment, being able to get into a lease agreement with a landlord. Next, we're going to speak to a legal expert who is going to talk about the services here tomorrow for expungement. But I think a lot of us can learn some good advice, and we'll talk to him in about 3 minutes.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Over the next few minutes, we're going to get a crash course in expunging criminal records. It's going to probably be wildly popular here tomorrow at Project Homeless Connect at the Salt Palace, where there not only hundreds of volunteers will show up, but also people experiencing homelessness. And one of the free services that will be offered here, Dave, is an expungement of records. I think this is critical for people, even if you aren't experiencing homelessness, to learn how to do this, because a criminal record for many years ago, as our legal expert or attorney that's going to be speaking to us in a moment, Nathaniel Player, said, the internet's forever. And so many years ago, if you committed a crime, if it was a low-level crime, nobody could really find out about it. But nowadays, the internet just makes the world aware.
And sometimes that information is valuable. Sometimes it is a real problem. And I think having that conversation, finding out what exactly can we get expunged, I think that's an important conversation to have.
Nathaniel Player is an attorney. He will also be you're the lead here, right, for
yeah.
tomorrow for all the legal services that will be provided. So you'll have a number of attorneys, legal experts helping out here as people look to have their records expunged. But I think the big question people always have about this is what records can be expunged.
Sure. Well, there are legal and financial services available at Project Homeless Connect, and expungement is one of the many things people can get help with. And that's what's exciting about it, is people can get help with a range of things. I know expungement's really exciting. There are two aspects to expungement. One is, does it get expunged automatically? The legislature passed a bill a couple of years ago that made it so expungements would happen automatically if certain conditions were met. There were challenges in sort of taking on that massive project, because cases have been going on for a really long time and they're all out there on the court's public website. And so the courts have been working very diligently to get those records expunged to comply with the law. they're not done, but they're approaching a place where what the expectation is matches the reality. So one question is it expunged automatically? And even if it was expunged automatically, did that actually happen through the court process? The other thing is, if it's not going to get expunged automatically, can you still ask for expungement? And there are factors that go into both of these things: the nature and severity of the crime, how long ago did it happen, what has happened since then. Those are the kinds of questions generally that people ask. And there are two really neat agencies that will be able to help people with expungement tomorrow. One is called Clean Slate Utah. Clean Slate Utah is sort of a free service that's nonprofit, community-based, that tries to help people access this legal process and understand how to move and navigate through the process. Another is called RASA. RASA is a B corporation that uses this technology and access to the court's records to help people understand what's going on and use some fancy algorithms to make it happen.
Can you give me an example? What's something that could be expunged and how it is holding people back from progressing?
Sure. Well, I think it's sort of what you mentioned earlier, is this idea that the internet's forever. So, you know, when I was a kid, when I used to watch TVs, when I was a kid 20, 30 years ago, there was this idea that people did something wrong.
They did the crime, they did the time.
Yeah, they paid their debt to society. Uh-huh. And when they did the thing that they did wrong, they had to go away from us and couldn't be with us anymore. But then they could come back and reintegrate with us and be a part of society and engage with us. Now what happens is you see people who, you know, something bad happened 20 years ago. I maybe got a drinking ticket. I shoplifted because something bad was going on. There were lots of complications going on. And that stays with you forever. So that makes it hard to find housing. People ask for that in housing, and they can find that information when I'm looking for housing. And we obviously have a homelessness problem, which is why we have Project Homeless Connect, where we need it. It can also affect employment, other things like that just make it difficult to move past that, which is exactly the policy reason why the legislature passed the bill in the first place.
So it makes it, if records are expunged, it makes it so their information is no longer accessible to somebody who's doing a background check?
Yeah, so what an expungement legally means is that the record is sealed and no one can access it. I, as a court employee, can't even access it. Nobody can access it. And if you are asked, do you have a criminal record, and that was the only thing that was on your record and it was expunged, you can say, no, I don't have a criminal record, because no one would be able to say anything to the contrary.
Are felonies expunged?
Felonies are not automatically expunged. You can't automatically expunge one of those. You could ask for it to be expunged if you meet certain criteria. Again, it's sort of how long, what was the severity of the crime. Certain things cannot be expunged if you have a registrable offense, like you need to be on a sex offender registry. Those are really, really hard to get off without a lot of fancy maneuvering. But a low-level felony where enough time had passed and you hadn't done anything else wrong, you could ask for it, and the court has to make a determination.
We're speaking with Nathaniel Player. He is leading up the legal services that will be offered here tomorrow at the Salt Palace for Project Homeless Connect. It begins at 8 in the morning, runs till 3 in the afternoon. You said at the top of our conversation that is one of other many legal services that will be offered tomorrow. What else will be available?
Yeah, well, that's like what we're thinking in terms of being available to help people.
Is there an education process where maybe they're not quite sure what their rights are, what they're free to do, and where the limits and boundaries are
with regard to somebody who's
to homelessness and where you can stay, and I guess kind of as they're working through some of these things?
That's a really good question. I'm not aware of anybody who's offering that sort of service. It's something friends have talked about with me, about trying to make that sort of legal information available. I think it's hard, because if I'm really, really in survival mode and I'm worried about where I'm going to get food, where I'm going to go, processing complex information and thinking about a legal framework could be challenging. That doesn't mean it's not worth the effort to try, and it's something people have talked about.
Part of the issue, too, is that the longer you ignore a legal issue, doesn't mean it's going to go away. It usually gets worse, because then there can be warrants issued or summons for a parent, and then more, and a bench warrant. I mean, it just, the problems can just stack up. And the fact that you guys are here tomorrow in force helping people who are stuck in this situation, or maybe afraid of the whole legal system. I mean, I've been to court a lot of times as a reporter. I've also been there. I had to appear once in a lawsuit, for example, and it's a little scary.
Yeah,
when you're on that end of it, right? I mean, as a reporter, it's one thing, but when you show up or to serve jury duty or whatever it is, it can be it can be overwhelming for folks.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a secret. Courts are scary. I know. I work for the court, and courts are scary. My job is to make the courts more accessible, make the courts less scary. But it's scary going to court. What you got to do is you got to figure out how to get there. That might mean you need to get childcare, someone to watch your kids, because your kids can't really be there. You got to figure out how to get there. Studies show that the farther you are away on public transportation, the more likely you are to miss your court appearance. So just getting there is hard. Once you get there, you have to go through security. What we know is that they don't let you bring tons of stuff in, so there's a long list of things you can't bring in. If you have that stuff and you came on public transportation, what are you supposed to do? I don't know. Some people leave it in the bushes. I see people hiding their stuff in the bushes outside because they're trying to get into the courthouse, but it's hard to get in. So the bailiff's going to have you go through a metal detector, and then you have to figure out where in the courthouse I go just to get there. Yeah. And you know, studies show that people are afraid of things like, I'm afraid I'm going to do something wrong, like sit on the wrong side of the room when I'm in the court. Like really basic stuff that you as a reporter or me as a lawyer, like, oh, that doesn't really matter. Nobody cares. But that freaks people out. They're nervous about that.
Yeah. It does. I can see why. Nathaniel, thank you so much. And good luck tomorrow. I'm sure the services there will be flooded with folks looking for help. Appreciate Nathaniel Player joining us here at Project Homeless Connect from the Salt Palace, which starts tomorrow at 8 o'clock, goes until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you're hoping to be able to volunteer, we're so sorry. The volunteer opportunities have closed for now. However, there's always next year. Always next year.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news. Dave and Dujanovic have inside sources.
I'm looking forward to speaking with Boyd Matheson, Inside Sources. He spoke to Ian Rowe. Ian Rowe is a senior fellow at American Enterprise Institute, and I feel his conversation with Ian is very connected to our mission here today at Project Homeless Connect at the Salt Palace. We are live at the Salt Palace. Boyd back in studio getting ready for his show this afternoon at 1 o'clock, but we're going to bring him into the conversation in a minute and tell us what he learned during his conversation with Ian Rowe.
As we're watching everybody set up here at the Salt Palace, again, it's tomorrow, 8 to 3. People can show up and get these services. But there was a line that I was told that really stood out to me. And what she said was, I can't solve the issue of homelessness, but today I can choose to help. And it can be overwhelming when you start. And often we talk about the very big picture and what can we do as a federal government? What can we do on the local side? What they're trying to do right now here at Project Homeless Connect is get somebody a haircut, you know, something, get a tooth extracted, get somebody some glasses or some legal advice.
Boyd, I want to dive into the discussion that you had with Ian Rowe. I know you texted us during our show and you pointed out that what your conversation with him is very connected to what we're talking about today. Let's start with this for our listeners. Who is he and how does he play into our discussion about homelessness?
Yeah, so Ian Rowe, as you mentioned, is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. So his focus is on education and upward mobility, family formation. And he's not one of those ivory tower think tank guys. He is boots on the ground. He's the co-founder of Vertex Partnership Academies, which is a school in the Bronx, New York. And he has his own fascinating story. His parents came over as immigrants from Jamaica, and he has his own upward mobility story and education story. And so he's kind of on the front end of this, of how do we prevent people from falling into poverty and being unsheltered and that downward spiral. So he's really trying to look at the front end. What do we need to do there to make sure we're not trying to fix things just on the back end?
Yeah, I think so often we look at where they are right now instead of like, how did they get here? And is there something we could have done to help prevent that in the first place? What are some of his thoughts on that?
You know, really interesting. One of the big indicators, many people are familiar with the success sequence, which is education first, and then work, entrepreneurship in particular, then family formation, then if you're going to have children, that follows. And that sequence delivers real results. In fact, the statistics are extraordinary, that someone who would follow that sequence, whether they're from the Bronx, New York, or anywhere else in the country, 97% chance they will not fall into poverty. Now, the interesting thing is that you can't actually teach that in a lot of schools for fear you're going to offend somebody. But Ian shared a really interesting thing, a conversation with some students down in Louisiana, where they can't teach that success sequence for a bunch of government reasons. But he asked the kids, he said, look, if I could give you four things you could do in sequence that would give you a 97% chance of staying out of poverty throughout your life, would you want to know that? And of course, the kids are like, well, of course we want to know that. We don't want to end up in poverty. What do we need to know? And so that sequence is something that really matters. And doing it from a descriptive manner, not a prescriptive manner. So it's giving information saying, look, you're going to make some choices. You're going to have a sequence of choices in your life. And those choices are going to really impact the next 30, 40, 50, 60 years of your life. And so what you do with those really matters. And so doing it and then, of course, letting people make their own choices makes a huge difference.
Boyd, remind us, what was that sequence again?
Education and then work or a career or entrepreneurship is a big part of that. Family formation and then children. The interesting thing they have found, and one of the things he's doing here in the state of Utah, is looking at just this really interesting thing. If you look at the non-marital birth rate, and how that connects to homelessness and poverty, it's pretty stunning. The national average for non-marital births is about 40% right now. In the Bronx, where his school is, it's 84%. And the path and the trajectory of that in terms of who ends up in poverty is just stunning. And so it's often about not necessarily the family you came from. It's the family you form as you continue to move forward in your life. But that sequence really matters.
Boyd, I want to play some of your conversation that you had with Ian Rowe about what young people want.
This is what young people want. Mm. Young people don't want to be told, well, you're growing up in a world that's so screwed up. You've got to wait for some other group of oppressors to take their proverbial boot off of your neck, right? Mm. Young people want to know, well, what is it that I can do?
Yeah.
What is it that I can accomplish? What are the tools that have existed for the millions of people before me that have faced much greater barriers?
Yeah.
What are those tools? And so we as adults have the responsibility to be honest with young people about the tools within their control.
Yeah.
The strength of the family they form, regardless of the family that they're from, the ability for them to shape a personal faith commitment, the opportunity to get a great education, and then ultimately their ability to be an entrepreneur, to be a problem solver in their own lives. We owe it to young people to tell that story.
It's interesting, Boyd, as he was speaking, I thought, boy, so much of this is really common sense. I mean, if you have children before you have an education or job, of course, that's going to make things a lot more difficult for you. There is a solution. There is a recipe, so to speak. And why are we so afraid to have these conversations or to lay this out for folks?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And part of it is something else that Ian gets to often, and it's this idea of victim mentality. Because it creates this blame game, and it actually happens on two parts. And I think this is what really ties into what you're doing over there at the event center today, is looking at this victimhood. So then what you do is you either blame government or institutions or all the things that aren't fair in life. So you're blaming that as a reason for it. Or we do the flip and we blame the victim. We blame the person who is homeless. We blame the person who is addicted. And neither of those lead to really good results. And so, as you said, David, it often is very common sense. And sometimes we're afraid of that. We're afraid of offending somebody. But in the reality, we always talk about what does the data tell us? And then what can we do about it? And then what are the results? And we have to measure everything. And sometimes we tend to look to government for a solution. Government is part of it. That's really, really important. Government has a role to play, to be sure. But we also have to recognize some of the things that we're talking about and some of the very core issues that put someone into poverty or being unhoused or dealing with other issues is not something that government can fix or even a government program can fix. It's most often what you're all experiencing and what is going to happen tomorrow, yeah. And that's community coming together to give a haircut, to do some dental
right.
work, to get a suit.
Volunteers.
Yeah.
Tons of volunteers. Giving people a helping hand. Boyd Matheson of Inside Sources. Look forward to your show today at 1 o'clock. Got a lot more straight ahead, including 20 minutes. We've got Representative John Curtis calling the show. Dave's delighted to speak to him because Representative Curtis made this list of top 10 members of Congress. Was it just Republican Party?
No. Everybody.
Everybody. Out of well, everybody. Okay.
Well, they have Republican,
yeah, they
the
have
top 10
lists.
Republicans and the top 10 Democrats.
Most effective. Most effective in Congress. You're going to ask him what a secret is, I bet.
Because if he could share that with the rest of Congress, the rest of his 534 colleagues out there, maybe we could get something done.
Look forward to that conversation in a few minutes. Well, let's get a lesson in ESG. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Governance. And I'm not going to try to come across as an expert on this because I'm getting a crash course in this.
You're not alone.
I see acronyms like ESG and I'm like, my eyes glaze over. I'm like, as long as it doesn't impact me, I don't want to know anything more. But Governor Spencer Cox kind of just is, you know, made some comments about President Biden's veto regarding ESGs. So basically what happens is large companies get ESG scores. And what that means is your company gets a score depending on environmental policies like green initiatives, social agendas such as gender and diversity policies, and governance. Like if you have a diverse board members, people that sit on your board, there's diversity there. But bring in Governor Spencer Cox, who sounded off on President Biden's veto of a law that was passed by Congress.
It's interesting because it was the president's first veto.
Right.
And it was bipartisan, obviously. You know, nothing's going to get through if it's not bipartisan at this point because the Republicans on the House, the Democrats have the Senate. So this was bipartisan legislation that got to the president's desk that he vetoed. And the reason he vetoed it is ESG and the score can be used by investors, so fiduciaries, people that are running your 401k, your mutual funds, right? And what they can do is ESG investing is, I'm looking at this company. They are wonderfully diverse. They have an incredible amount of green initiatives. They have solar panels on their roofs. I'm going to invest in this company because I really like what they stand for. Well, would you rather have that or a company like ExxonMobil? That is an absolute, does not score well.
In your portfolio. Okay.
So, for example, ExxonMobil in the last 3 years would get a very low ESG score, right? Because they're big oil. Let me talk about the growth, though, in the last 3 years because of the war, because of the shortage, because of COVID. ExxonMobil went from $181 billion in revenue to $413 billion in revenue. So if your portfolio manager is investing in companies, they could look at ExxonMobil as, that's a bad investment because I don't agree with big oil. But you will have missed out on incredible gains, especially over the last couple of years. So that's why Governor Cox is frustrated. And this is what he had to say on Fox Business.
It's deeply disappointing. This was a bipartisan bill that passed, pushing back on this Department of Labor rule. And again, I want to be very clear what this is and what it isn't. What the president just said just is not true. Mm-hmm. Again, what the president is saying is that fiduciaries, the people who manage the money, the retirement accounts of individuals in this country, now don't have to worry about the returns. That's making money so that you can actually retire. they can focus on these other things. And so this is a backdoor way for this administration to try to accomplish something that they can't get through Congress.
And then Governor Cox went on to say that it may come up, fall upon the states to push back on some of these ESG policies.
And it affects regular people, blue-collar workers who are planning for their retirement now will not have as much money because the fiduciaries don't have to focus on the returns. They get to focus on these other things. And so ultimately, as often happens with mistakes in Washington, D.C., it's up to the states to push back, and we are. I think we have about 20 governors that are working together to push back on these ESG investment policies, including the state of Utah. Very proud that we're one of the first states. I just signed into law 4 different ESG bills that will make that kind of decision making, as it has always been, illegal in the state of Utah.
Joining us right now is KSL political reporter Lindsay Ertz. Lindsay, you spoke to the state solicitor general yesterday, representing the attorney general's office. What is the state doing about this?
Well, yeah, you heard Governor Cox say that they have 4 different bills that he just signed here in Utah. Those all do kind of different things, but essentially they're trying to limit this ESG investing from Utah and from these state agencies. And so the attorney general's office sent a letter to the federal government basically claiming that this climate investing, or ESG, contributed to the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. And that letter also added, you know, this pushback that the administration needs to stop elevating its, quote, climate risk agenda above other what they call true risks. So what they're saying here is that the administration is pushing their so-called climate agenda. And when they do that, it forces these fiduciaries to invest in companies that may be risky investments. That's kind of their big rub about this. And when I talked to Solicitor General Melissa Holyoke, that's kind of what she reiterated to me.
We're not trying to prevent anyone from investing however they want to invest. What we don't want is pressure from the government pushing investments in one way or the other, or allowing rules that allow people with fiduciary duties, like investment managers, to push investments into things that they shouldn't be doing.
And the other thing I'll just point out, Dave and Deb, is that this letter to the federal government also questioned the political motivations of these agencies, the Fed and the Treasury, that Reyes believes bailed out SVB depositors. Now, there was this big conversation at the time it was happening, like, this is a bailout, this is not a bailout, right? We didn't bail out any executives, any shareholders, but we did. The federal government is making sure that depositors are whole, and the AG's office recognizes that, but they question, because these are largely clean tech sector companies, they argue that the Biden administration is kind of pushing this agenda to save these companies, when perhaps, they threw out this allegation, if these were oil and gas companies, would they be doing the same thing?
So just to go back to your interview with Solicitor General for the Attorney General's office, Lindsay, this is just for people who manage like 401ks, thrift savings plans, IRAs. This isn't for me if I just want to go onto my Robinhood account and throw money at a company that has a high ESG rating because they are, you know, very green in terms of, you know, where they, you know, recycling, or they use solar panels or whatever. I can still choose to do that as an individual investor, right? The
yes.
government has absolutely no say, as long as the investment is legal.
Yes. And that is specifically okay. what Solicitor General Melissa Holyoke said. You know, so far, they don't care what investments you as an individual make. But when it comes to the government, they don't want the government investing people's money in these what they say are risky investments, when the motivation of a fiduciary should be to make their client money.
Lindsay Ertz, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate that. And Debbie, I think that's kind of ultimately where I think a lot of us are torn, right? I mean, of course, we want to support a company that is green, that is diverse, that is doing all the right things. But if it's my 401k, I also want the best return possible. And if that means I've got to buy some big oil stock, then I'm probably going to buy some big oil stock if it means I'm going to be financially secure in my retirement.
So I'm going to put you on that hot seat just for a second, Dave, because you seem to know so much more about this than I do. This legislation that was passed by Congress by through bipartisan support would have allowed companies or not allowed investment companies to go after these green type companies or diverse companies in stock portfolios. Can you just clarify that for me? I'm sorry to be so confused about this, but
it can be overwhelming.
It's all a very new concept to me.
Yeah, there's a Department of Labor rule that essentially says, you have to take into account an ESG score when you are making investments, right? And this would say, no, if you want to and you want to make personal investments, but you can't use that as part of your metric. When you're evaluating, you basically have to look at it more objectively and say, will this company make money, whether it's big oil or whether it's a solar panel or Tesla?
There you have it. The Reader's Digest version, 30 seconds via Dave Noriega. Thank you so much for clarifying that. I was just getting a little confused through it all, but not unusual. It is a relatively new concept. It's kind of screaming onto the scene. And there you have it, another acronym that we need to track. And we will continue to do so with the help of Lindsay Ayres. Thank you so much, Lindsay, for jumping on the line with us. Speaking of jumping on the line, Representative John Curtis, you're up to bat next. Looking forward to the phone call in 4 minutes.
Dave and Dejanovic.
We're going to speak to Representative John Curtis in just a matter of moments. We were covering this story yesterday that he'd made a top 10 list of the most effective members in Congress. And while we were producing this, I tried to pick your brain and say, and asked, like, why? I mean, it is pretty amazing, right, to be an effective member of Congress. But I wanted to know why and what the legislation is that he has passed and sponsored and passed that has made him so effective. So instead of doing an entire sweep of the internet and congressional records to try to figure out what he has done, we decided to just get the man himself on the air with us and ask him.
Debbie, first of all, you're the worst.
I'm
like,
terrible.
Listen, I'm telling you all this great stuff. He was ranked like eighth most effective Republican in the House. Like, this is great. He's had four bills passed, three substantial bills that went into law. And you're like, yeah, but what did the laws say?
What did they do?
I'm like, I don't know. So.
Stop asking me questions. And so thankfully, Representative Curtis, you became available today for our show. So good to hear from you. And let me just ask you straight up, what did you do that has you labeled as one of the most effective members of Congress? I mean, what is the – listen, you have three pieces of – substantial pieces of legislation, but in your mind, what is the top one?
So, for the record, I could have just listened to you two interview me without me talking for a very long time. I was enjoying that.
Sorry, I lost track of all the stuff you're doing.
So, you know what? There's two principles here that I think are just very important. One is, I think we're really good listeners. Almost every one of those pieces of legislation came about as a constituent showed us a problem and wanted help solving that problem. One just real quickly is the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. There's pieces along the Bonneville Shoreline Trail that are actually wilderness, which means technically you can't ride a bicycle on them. When you talk about quality of life in Utah, an important feature is that Bonneville Shoreline Trail. And so they brought that to us and said, can you help? And we found a path forward. And so the second piece is, so first you have to find out what the problem is. The second piece is I've just got this incredible team, a team that loves to legislate, that measures success on effectiveness, not just feel-good stuff that we do back here. So a shout-out to my team and to my constituents who have really teed me up to have that recognition.
How willing has Congress been, your the House been, to listen to a Republican? Because I think there's certainly a perception that you guys can't even talk to each other across the hall.
Well,
you know, I hate that perception. There is some of that that goes on back here, but I think that what we've been able to achieve is evidence that there are a lot of people that, do work well together. And let's face it, the reality of it is we're in a divided government. And listen, I passed those bills not in a divided government, but a Democratic House, Senate, and presidency. If you can't figure out how to work across the aisle and find good people that will support you, you're not going to get anything done here. And I think that's another important key is realizing, look, we have to be realistic about this. We have to find people across the aisle who we can share common values and places we agree.
Representative John Curtis live on the line with us right now talking about this designation he received. Maybe one of the most effective members of Congress. This is something that is done through University of Virginia and Vanderbilt University. They team up, they compile this matrix, and then you bubbled up to one of the top 10. If Bonneville Shoreline Trail is your gold medal, what's your silver medal legislation that got there?
Well, I've got to tell you, and this actually goes to previous Congress, my gold medal is the Emory County Public Lands Act. It's one of the largest public lands bills in the state's history and one of the most difficult pieces of legislation that I have worked on. And what a great feeling of success to team with the locals in that area, my other members of the delegation, and that'd be my gold medal if there is such a thing.
Rural Utah is out of sight, out of mind at times. Remind us what does that do?
People don't realize this. It's actually 400 miles from the top of my district to the bottom. If you Google it, you have to even go through Colorado to get from the top to the bottom. But I'll tell you, the best men and women in the state, in my mind, are in rural Utah. These are patriotic, hardworking, God-fearing, humble people, and it's a real highlight for me. A big part of my district that I enjoy. And I think it's very important that they feel like that they have a representative here. You know, if you just simply go by the numbers, you wouldn't spend a lot of time there. But if you go by who really appreciates my help and who actually really needs my help, that's where not just me, but my entire team likes to spend a lot of time.
And that legislation did what for them, Congressman?
Well, it brought certainty into the region. They were worried, like down in the Berzerers area, that they would bounce back and forth with Antiquity Act designations, then have it repealed, then have it put back in, as would happen down in the Berzerers area. It brought certainty into the area so they can have economic stability. They can build a platform on that. It takes a lot of divisive, you know, how much divisiveness there is around Berzerers. It takes that out of the equation. And I just think it's done a lot of good things. And I have to give a huge shout out to those local leaders who were really pretty brave in advancing that legislation and putting a stake in the ground and saying this is important for us.
Representative John Curtis joining right now, labeled by I'm trying to remember exactly the name of what was the study called?
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Oh, I got it. The Center for Effective Lawmaking.
Yeah.
There we are.
I knew the word effective was in there.
what is it that Congress can do to become more effective? Because there's a couple things that stood out to me. As you were describing these bills, they weren't necessarily the headline, the something that's going to steal, you know, lead Fox News or lead CNN or MSNBC, but important to the state itself. What are some lessons that I think lawmakers could learn about being an effective Congress member?
You know, I think people will tell you when you come back here, you have to decide why you're coming. And there are those who come because they want to end up on the news. And, you know, there's a path to end up on Fox News or CNN every night. And there are those who come back because they want to be great orators. And there's people that come because they want to pass legislation. And I think you have to kind of decide. And the people you hire have a lot to do with your success. And so you need to hire people that also agree with you on those priorities. And it's kind of deciding what you want to do when you come here. There's a million paths that you can go, and it's impossible to take all of them. So you have to focus.
Representative John Curtis, before we let you go, speaking of headlines, the big headline today is the congressional hearing with the CEO of TikTok. Where do you, just for the record, where do you fall on the potential for the federal government to ban the use of TikTok in the United States?
Well, it was actually my committee, and I just a few minutes ago left questioning Mr. Chu.
Oh,
I had
good.
My 5 minutes with him.
Well, tell all, because we've been here at the Salt Palace. We didn't see you. So tell us, what was your questioning? What was your line of questioning about?
Well, I wanted him to acknowledge, and I worked hard to get him to acknowledge, that as a social media platform, they cross a line when they use algorithms to promote content or to diminish content. And Section 230 protects them from that. And I think that's wrong. I think we would solve all of this if they had liability for their actions. And right now they're all protected from decisions they make to amplify messages. So if they amplify a message that leads to an eating disorder in a young woman, there's no consequence for that. And that's where I had my line of questioning, is saying, look, tell me why you shouldn't have responsibility if you magnify a message that causes harm.
Where do you fall on the potential for a ban of TikTok?
Well, I know some of my colleagues are very vocal about that. I had some reservations simply from a constitutional legal standpoint. And I think as conservatives, we probably ought to find an answer that fits a little bit more in harmony with our conservative values. And that, to me, is accountability for their actions rather than just trying to ban what people are saying. I'd rather see them just be accountable for these things.
Representative John Curtis, thank you for taking the time to join us today. We'll talk to you again. Thanks.
And your willingness to answer questions beyond what made you one of the most effective members in Congress. And maybe that is what also makes him effective, is his willingness to jump on the line with us and other members of the media and talk through topics of the day, which the topic of the day today is the congressional hearing regarding TikTok and the CEO of TikTok, who is testifying before Congress this morning. Learned that Representative Curtis was on that committee and then had his own line of questioning. We'll read more about that today at KSLNewsRadio.com.
Yeah, it's important, and it is tricky, because if you do, say, ban TikTok, what are you going to do with Instagram or Snapchat or YouTube? It sets a precedence that is scary, and I think we got to be very, very thoughtful about how we proceed with TikTok.
Straight ahead, we're going to wrap up our live coverage from the Salt Palace. Project Homeless Connect is just getting started, though. Tomorrow's a full day of free homeless services for people experiencing homelessness. Excited to speak next to two people. First of all, the person helping to run this event tomorrow, and also an expert in veterans and homelessness. Straight ahead.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Oh, we're all so excited about what is going on here at the Salt Palace in downtown Salt Lake City. Tomorrow morning launches a big and a very important event for people experiencing homelessness. It's called Project Homeless Connect. There will be lots of services here, all of them free. It begins at 8. It ends at 3. People can get haircuts. They can get legal services. And in fact, in a moment, we're going to speak to a representative from the VA, Dave, where veterans who are homeless can come here tomorrow, too, and learn about services that are available for them.
I can speak personally. It's not that I don't care about homelessness. I'm overwhelmed by it. Mm. I don't know how to help. And I think so often we think, well, we've got to do this huge thing, and the federal government or the state government's got to step in and sweep in. And well, I can't do a lot about that, but I could donate my time here tomorrow. Yeah. You know, and that's one of those things, hands-on, get an idea, get invested in the community a little bit, and do what you can.
Misha Jensen is with the VA.
Coordinated entry specialist. So what does that mean? What do you do?
My role with the VA is to work in our entire coverage area, which includes most of the state of Utah, into parts of Idaho and parts of Nevada, in working with community partners and community systems to help figure out what are some of the gaps we have in services for veterans with housing and homeless issues, and how can we improve the system whole approach and make it easier or get more services in line to help veterans experiencing housing or homeless issues.
Every year there is what's called a point in time survey done where volunteers go into the community and they count the number of people experiencing homelessness within that community. So we have an idea. Maybe it's not a good idea or an exact count, of people experiencing homelessness. And the count for homeless veterans was 155 in 2022. But you and I both know that number is low. I feel like that number is low. So I think it's very important to get word out to our veterans who are experiencing homelessness about this event tomorrow. They can come here for free. What do they need to bring with them, and what kind of services will be offered?
Veterans don't have to bring anything with them. Sometimes they're worried that they can't get services if they don't have a copy of their DD-214 discharge record, or if they don't have a picture ID. And we actually have the opportunity to look up service information so they can get meet with the Veterans Benefit Administration. They can meet with the State Department of Veteran and Military Affairs. We have our VA homeless team here. We have the Road Homes homeless veteran homeless team here as well.
What is the biggest struggle veterans have when it comes to homelessness and what they're experiencing?
I think the biggest struggle is there's a stigma associated with being homeless in general, but there's a deeper stigma being a veteran. There's the concern of, like, these people served our country, they served for our freedom, and now they live on the streets, they live in their cars, they live in the shelter. And there's a stigma amongst other veterans, as well as I think the general community, of like, how can this be possible? And so sometimes it's harder for veterans to want to get help, or they want to get help, but the stigma can sometimes really get in the way.
Well, and there's no doubt when you're talking about the military, there's an attitude of pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get things done, and personal responsibility and accountability. And there's times that you're just ill-equipped and you need the help.
Or you've been suffering with PTSD as a result of your service.
Absolutely.
You're turning to self-medicating for that if you're a veteran, or like you said, maybe what they need is like a helping hand, Misha, that they realize they can come here and start that process.
Yeah. And you talk about the point in time count. Some veterans are not being counted because they're really good at living off the grid. They're in places where we can't find them.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the work you've been doing. And thank you. Katie Zimmerman joins us right now, Salt Lake Valley Coalition. And you're going to be the director of Project Homeless Connect next year. What are you most excited about this year?
I'm really excited to see the event in action. I mean, I think we talked earlier this morning that it hasn't happened since 2019. And I think we can all agree that the world has changed since then significantly. We've been through a pandemic. We've been through COVID. And I'm just excited to see what's different, what's new, what we need to do going forward, and how many people we're really going to have show up, how many people we're going to be able to help.
It starts tomorrow at 8 o'clock here at the Salt Palace with a free breakfast. People can also get haircuts, they can get legal services. What else is on the agenda?
Medical, dental, vision. We've got all the Veterans Affairs that Misha was just talking about as well. We're going to have all sorts of things that we can do. Pet care. This was something, a client actually listened earlier in the morning and then called me and said, what about my pet? What if I want to bring my dog? We actually have a pet care center as well that's going to be run by Rough Haven, where folks can come and check their pet in and then be able to walk around all day without being worried about their pet and not have to leave their pet outside either. So they can come in and check their pet. We have a bike repair and bike check. We've been saying all wheels welcome. So if someone needs a wheelchair fixed or something like that, they're welcome to bring that as well. Just get anything they need. We're hoping to have a service here that can meet the need.
Katie Zimmerman, thank you for joining us. Misha Jensen, we appreciate all the hard work you put in. We're happy to be able to have a conversation about this and to open up and kind of break down some of the stigma. We thank you for your participation. Best of luck tomorrow.
A lot of people probably wondering if they can volunteer. Volunteer opportunities are closed for now. But if you are volunteering and you're driving your own vehicle down here, Katie reminds us they can park and get a validation at the gateway.
At the gateway, yes. And we would also encourage folks to use trucks as well. Park in those parking lots, take trucks in, especially if someone's experiencing homelessness and needs to leave their car. Leave it there where it's free and then ride trucks in.
Love it. Good luck tomorrow. We're excited for you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
K
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.